The Mark O'Brien Radio Show podcast is brought to you by Jersey Mike's Subs.
Welcome back in to the Mark O'Brien Radio Program. Our toll-free number is 800-955-5567. And before we speak with Greg, comic book fight, the comic book duel continues.
Oh, God.
We get this text. To that listener that says DC sucks, dude, saying something sucks is not cool. Batman over Iron Man any day, brah.
Boy, you step into the world of comic books and you step in there with your life. We welcome back to this show a friend, Greg Lake. Good morning, Greg.
Gentlemen, good morning. Lovely to be here.
We want to thank you for the many times that you have joined us for Christmas shows. You did it twice as a solo artist and then once with Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. So thank you for that.
Well.
Greg is going to be May 18th at the Orpheum Theater. I don't know if you've been to the Orpheum lately, but they totally redid it, and it's gorgeous in downtown L.A.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place.
Truly is.
Perfect for this show, too.
Tell us about the show.
It's a collection of songs that I really rediscovered when I was writing my autobiography. And, I saw that what they represented was the journey that the audience and I had shared over these years. And I came up with the concept of Songs of a Lifetime. And I thought it would just make a lovely, intimate show to play these songs, but in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a sit-down storyteller-type show.
Okay.
It's highly impactive, and there'll be a lot of surprises and shocks, really, in the show. Because the one thing I was determined to do is for it not to be boring, you know.
You don't want that.
No, you don't want that, but it is intimate. And the other thing, too, that is nice is along with these songs, there's often stories that go along with them. But, of course, the audience have got stories as well. So I let them tell their stories. So it's kind of an interactive thing.
One of the things about groups, musical groups, that have an eclectic sound, they have a very dedicated following of people.
Yes.
For Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, how would you describe that fandom in that what was Emerson, Lake, and Palmer musically about to you?
On the large scale, for instance, California Jam, you look at it, 300,000 people, and that was a sort of event. But now what it is, it's a family. You know, a lot of them communicate with each other and talk to each other. It's kind of, there's almost a network of people that sort of share this common interest. But not only in ELP, but also in King Crimson. And when I walk on stage at night, it feels more like walking into a family room, you know. It's a tremendous feeling. And of course, when we start sharing all the memories, you see people with tears in their eyes and, you know, and there's a lot of laughter as well. So it's it is almost like a family celebration.
You know, I love this little factoid, Greg. I didn't know this until I just read it. The debut album for Emerson, Lake, and Palmer included one of my favorite songs, you guys, Lucky Man. Now, Lucky Man was based on a poem that you had written when you were 12 years old.
That is right. I wrote the song when I had my first guitar. I learned the first four chords. And I made up this little song. It was only many years later when it actually came to get recorded. But yeah, I did. I wrote it when I was very young. Just shows you how songs change the perspective. They really become to belong to the audience more than the artist in the end.
Yeah.
How would you say, I mean, obviously your creativity has been known to us since Emerson, Lake, and Palmer and King Crimson. Now, as an older man, how would you say your creativity is brought out of you? What do you spend your time doing with it?
I've been humbled. I mean, in a word, that's pretty much it, you know. I tell the story on stage of when I first went to see Elvis, and I walked out of there, and I knew I'd never be that good, you know. And it really took me some while to sort of come to terms with it. But of course, in the end, you've just got to accept you're who you are. But that's what time has taught me, is that you ain't nothing special. You know, there's a lot of people out there who are great and greater. But you made your contribution, and I think if I do feel proud, I feel proud because I've made an honest contribution.
Are you a techie guy? I mean, with Pro Tools now, you can actually record an album in your living room. Are you that guy, or do you kind of stay away from that stuff?
You know, I'm both of those guys. I can. I do run Pro Tools, and I do that. But more and more do I favor live music. You know, I value the player, the interaction between players.
Yeah.
The trouble with Pro Tools is it's one guy. You know, you're the drummer, you're the bass, you're everybody. And that leads to sort of mono music. I like shared music. The word shared, you know, is really key to me now. But that's an interesting thing I've learned, is the value in sharing music.
You know, Ray Manzarek of The Doors was on our show a while back, and I'll never forget what he was saying about when we knew we were on stage and we knew we were in that groove.
Yeah.
There was nobody better than us.
Well, yeah. I think that's what other people refer to as chemistry. You know, you look at bands, for instance, like the Beatles or any of those big bands, they had a chemistry. It was to do with the people. All of a sudden,
it wasn't
that they were so great individually.
It's true.
But as an ensemble, all together, they became effervescent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of a sudden, there was a flashpoint, and that made them great.
I also want to go back about your comment that creativity, that you've been humbled. Let me just say that your contribution to music, the world of music with King Crimson, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, and then some of your solo stuff. I think you've touched quite a few lives with what you've done, and you should be very, very proud of that.
Well, it's very kind of you to say so, and you know, and I do see that, and believe me, I'm trying to meet them personally, as many as I can. And it is very touching, and again, very humbling, you know, to see that the music has... Because in the end, it's when you write a song, it's from soul to soul. You write it to touch another person's soul. And when you see that happen, that's the ultimate gratification.
Well, listen, Greg, this gentleman is a friend, and you now see why his music came from his soul, because that's the way he speaks as well. You'll have a chance to really thoroughly enjoy an evening with Greg at his Songs of a Lifetime, the 2012 tour, May the 18th at the Orpheum Theater in downtown L.A. Don't have to write any of this down. It's all up there on markandbrian.com for you. Greg, we always enjoy our conversations. Please don't wait so long to get back on with us.
I will. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, Greg. When we come back, we give you your chance to win something from our junk drawer to see if you can guess where that baby word from a song we played at 7:15 comes from. Call now, 800-955-5567. It is the Mark and Brian radio program. Welcome back to the Mark and Brian radio program. Our toll-free number is 800-955-5567. At 7:15 this morning, we played a little snippet of a song, the word baby. That's the theme of the week. Baby is used in millions of songs throughout the history of music, and we played it for you. You've got to give us the artist and the name of the song. And it's all brought to you by, well, Mark and Brian's Junk Drawer is brought to you by Junk King. Call 1-888-88-JUNK to clean your junk drawers at home. Spin that wheel of digits, mother... Ooh, I almost said that. I'm on the air. Almost said a dirty word. Ted spins the wheel of digits. It's line 6. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Can you give us... we're doing fine. Thank you, sir. Can you give us the name of the song and the artist that baby came from?
Yeah, it's Baby Got Back by Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Yeah, easy one. Sure. Yeah. Anything from the junk drawer is yours.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
You betcha. All right. It's quiet in here. It's too quiet.
Oh, hi. Hi. Hey, Danny. In the back studio back there. Hey, Danny.
What's up?
Are you ready for some meat myths?
Let's do it.
Wow. Affable, Danny.
It really is.
Are these meat sound effects we've heard before, or did you add anything new?
No, it's all stuff from before. I got one new thing in here.
Oh, okay, good.
Well, that's, I mean, at least there's one.
Something he's fresh.
You're building.
There you go.
All right, these are four myths. Now, men, we take our meat seriously. We don't mess around. When it's time for grilling, which now it's starting to become, actually any time of the year it's time for grilling. But there are things that we, men, who love our meat, that we have believed to be true. Not. For example, myth number one. Searing the meat seals in the juices. Forget this one. It's not true. Never has been, never will be. Most likely the idea came from the crusted exterior that meat develops as it is seared. Surely that crust could seal in the juices, right? But in the test kitchen, we tested this old maxim by weighing steaks before and after they were cooked. Some were seared first, others weren't. There was no difference in the amount of juices that were lost between the various steaks. None whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Sammy, did you learn anything on that one?
She said nothing.
All right, let's try number two then, Sammy. Surely you'll learn something here. Well, she's a woman, too. Women don't enjoy their meat.
Is she, though? Is she a woman?
Mm-hmm. Myth number two. Marinating meat.
Wait, what was that?
Oh, ouch.
A guillotine.
Wow.
Well, you know what we're going to have to do now.
That's the new one.
Yeah, that's the new one. That's a guillotine. Now, after this, we'll take a break after you're finished here, and we'll come back and play the Kruger sketch. The Kruger
That's commercial. Right. Myth number two, marinating meat makes it juicy and tender.
Uh-huh.
No, it doesn't.
It does, too.
Marinades are made with some kind of oil, citrus, and herb combo that can only penetrate the very exterior of the meat. In the test kitchen, we found that after 18 hours, a red wine marinade could only make its way 1 millimeter into the beef.
Hmm.
It makes you feel good about it, but it's doing nothing. You might as well just pour the juice on the steak before you put it on the grill. It'll do the same thing.
What about chicken? Is chicken more porous? Will it suck in there deeper?
Doesn't say.
Hmm.
Boy, you guys are quick. We just brought up the word chicken and you're already on it. Nice. Sammy, did you learn anything on number two?
No, I already knew that.
You did not?
Yes, I did.
You knew that it was no good to marinate meat? She didn't know that, stupid girl. Myth number three.
Was there a frog in there?
Get that cricket out of here, and then frog or whatever. Eating pink pork will make you sick.
Yeah.
Well, once upon a time, this may have been true, as there was a fear of ingesting an ugly parasite named trichinosis. Cooking pork to a safe but gray interior temperature of 160 would kill this trichinosis. But who would want to eat that dried up chop? Today, government standards have all but eliminated the risk of this this contamination of pork. So according to the Center for Disease Control, between the years of 97 and 2001, the average reported cases of trichinosis was only 12. Pork. And
sheep. Sheep.
Sammy, did you learn anything on that one?
Hey, you did have a sheep. All right, cool.
Myth number four. Always rinse off poultry that comes from the supermarket. Back away from the sink, my friend. I know that it's been pounded into your brain that you should unwrap poultry, give it a good rinse in the sink. But beware that what you're most likely doing is splashing all those yummy surfaces with bacteria to the faucet, the sink, and the surrounding area. Now, if you're willing to give the sink a super scrub through after you're done, then fine. But you're better off simply cooking the poultry to a safe internal temperature.
Why do I like pounded chicken more than regular chicken breasts?
Because you probably don't like a big, thick piece of chicken.
It just chews better. It tastes better for me. I don't know what it is. We do have time. It's only a couple minutes long, so here we go. You know, now that we're all on the meat myths and meat topic, let's play this. There are so many reasons to shop at Kruger's Supermarket that it's impossible to choose the best one. Is it our huge selection of fruits and vegetables? Is it our incredibly large frozen food aisle? Or is it our unsurpassed selection of canned soups? Well,
If you ask most folks, they'll tell you the best reason to shop at Kroger is our award-winning meat department. Yes, we take great pride in serving you the juiciest cuts of meat that money can buy at prices that are impossible to beat.
A lot of people ask us how we can serve such tender cuts of beef and chicken day in and day out like we do. Well, the key is in the killing. Because our butchers who work in the Kroger's meat department, it's not just a job for them. They actually hate animals.
Yes, at Kroger's, our butchers use the bluntest objects that they can find to silence and eventually kill the animals that we serve you in order to drag out the animal's pain and make them suffer for as long as they possibly can.
You see, at Kroger's, we kill our animals with extreme malice, and it makes a difference for a taste you can love.
Sometimes, we'll even shout insults. We'll even shout insults at the animals and taunt them as they lie there waiting to die. And that only seems to make their meat juicier and more tender.
It's the extra effort that we put into slaughtering our animals that sets Kroger apart. Sure, we don't need to use a guillotine to kill our cattle, but when you're eating one of our delicious hamburgers, you'll be glad that we didn't show those stupid cows any mercy.
The fact is, our butchers chose a low-paying, unfulfilling career with no chance of advancement, and there's nothing they love more than taking out their anger on a poor innocent animal that they're paid to kill.
Hey, it's not our fault that cows can't run away and chickens can't defend themselves. No, our job is simply to slaughter animals in the most inhumane manner possible and then sell you their flesh at a price that fits your budget.
So, stop on by the Kroger Meat Department today, because if it doesn't say Kroger on the package, then the animal just didn't suffer enough. If you just heard that for the first time, that is probably the most requested sketch we've ever...
Second most requested.
To what?
Elvis.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
it's one of the top five, definitely.
So we periodically throw it out there in case there's somebody who hadn't checked it out.
All right, we'll be right back with John Avello from the Las Vegas Wynn Hotel Casino. It is the Mark and Brian Radio Program. Going back to the battle of our listeners between Marvel and DC Comics, it's getting ugly. I can't even read some of these things.
That's hysterical.
Some of these texts. I mean, some of them are very funny, but some of them are so ugly and mean.
You know, it's a different world. You've got your Batman, Spider-Man world, and then you've got your Thor, Avengers world. So, crazy.
Batman is DC Comics, right?
Right, and Spider-Man is DC.
And Spider-Man's DC. Well, this guy is obviously a Stan Lee comic guy because he said, yeah, because every male superhero needs a teenage boy to hang out with. That ain't creepy at all. These people are vicious. All right. With us on the phone, calling from Las Vegas, is our friend John Avello. Good morning, John.
Hi, M&B.
How you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I'm big weekend coming up.
Yeah.
Fights, Kentucky Derby, NBA playoff, NHL playoffs, and baseball, just the full gamut.
Now, are you talking about the fight? Which fight is that?
Cotto.
Oh, we have our local boy, Mr. Mayweather, going to fight this week.
That's right. Who do you like?
I like him. I mean, he has never lost, and he comes into a fight prepared. You know, going against Cotto, Cotto's had some good fights, but he's never fought a guy like Mayweather. Mayweather's such a good defensive fighter, so I think he'll get out of it.
How old is he, Mayweather?
I don't know his exact age, 30s.
So he's still? Okay.
Yeah, he's in his 30s. You know, the big fight that everybody's been expecting is him and Pacquiao, and I don't know if that's ever going to materialize. That we always felt that would probably be one of the biggest betting fights of all time.
Now, you also have the Kentucky Derby this weekend. What are your choices?
Well, there's one thing about picking horses, and there's another thing about betting horses. When you're betting horses, you should be betting based on what the odds are. And the morning line odds aren't always indicative of what the actual odds are going to be at race time. So I need to see those odds. I can tell you the horses that will be tough in the race. Union Rags is a horse that has done absolutely nothing wrong in his racing career. When he loses, he's usually losing. He's in the second position, and he has trouble in the race of some sort. There's another horse out of New York that's never lost, that's been running out of New York. It's called Gemologist. He's never lost, and he's a good one. And then they made this horse Bodie Meister, the favorite, who's trained by Bob Baffert. He likes to go to the front, and we'll see if a horse that hasn't really had that many races can compete against this group who's a little seasoned.
So John,
it's an interesting race. It'll be a fun race, as
John,
usual.
Do you recall the biggest payout you had to give up for a horse race?
You know, there's been some pretty big payouts in the Derby. Mine That Bird won a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
I think he paid, he was over $100. You have to remember, if the favorites don't get there, you know, those three horses will be probably 8-1 or less, and then there'll be a bunch of them that are in the 12-40-1 range. So this is one of those races where it's a cavalry charge, and sometimes the unpredictable happens. So you could see big payoffs here.
John, wanted to get your thoughts. We talked about this earlier this morning. Of course, with Junior Seau, it's looking like he took his own life. And many are going on the NFL Network, former football players and analysts, and they're talking about how a player spends his entire life building a career of playing this game of football. And that every day he wakes up, he's told what to do, go here, go ahead. And then one day, all of the attention, all of the fame are gone. And even Deion Sanders said, I went from walking on the red carpet, people cherishing my name, to the one day when nobody was saying my name, and I was lonely and alone and thought about killing myself. Your thoughts on this?
Well, there's life after any occupation. There's life after that. And so what you need to do is you need to kind of reevaluate everything and say, look, I'm not doing this anymore, but, you know, my life's good and I need to start doing some things this way. I have a friend named Richie Rinaldi, ex-NBA player, and his job is to work with NBA players after their career.
Excellent.
Whether that means continuing education, getting back on track to do things you've always wanted to do, or to help you, you know, come off of this career that you've had.
Yep.
And so I think these guys need to be worked with. I mean, there's a lot of money in football and basketball and all these major sports, and a lot of that money kind of probably needs to be allocated towards helping those guys come down from the high of being the star.
See,
and
that's,
unfortunately, you know, if there's not enough of it. These guys all need some help.
That was something that we talked about this morning, and I'm so glad to hear that the NBA has something in place. We talked about the possibility that Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL, would start putting people in place to work with these guys as they're not only going out of the NFL, but when they're coming into it. So to try to get them ready, psychologically get them ready for this very tough transition they're going to go through.
Yeah, you know, and another thing, guys, hasn't Junior Seau, did he come out and say he was on taking steroids? Was he the one that said it or no?
I don't know about that.
I don't know.
About a year ago, there was kind of a crack in the armor when he was arrested for domestic violence, and then he drove his SUV off a cliff.
So I don't know if he was. I know steroids is a big part of sports and always has been, and I'm not saying that he's been on them. But, you know, they will affect your psyche and your mental outlook on life in the long run. So, I mean, there's just a lot to be done. You know, he was a great player. Obviously, when he bowed out, he came back into the game because he missed the limelight, and unfortunately, he took his life. And it's sad to hear. And I hope others can learn. I hope the NFL and the other organizations in sports can learn from this and help others before anything else happens.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with John Avello, Director of Race and Sports Operations at the Wynn in Vegas. John, I wanted to ask you, and in fact, I think of you a lot when something like this happens, because your job is never ending. It's not like you can just, you know, leave your work at work. I mean, something is always happening, and you've got to adjust things, making the lines for these sporting events. So when a Stoudemire gets pissed off and puts his hand through the glass of a fire extinguisher holder in the wall, he's out for a few games. You don't know at that point how many. How does that change, and how immediately do you have to go to work on that? How do you, to change the lines?
Well, as soon as we find out something that's happened, whether it's in, because there's been some injuries, there's been some suspensions going on over the last couple of weeks, as soon as we find that out, we take the game down. And,
oh.
And then we evaluate what that player is worth, what he means to the team, what it means to that game, and then we put it back up within 5 minutes. If we know the player is suspended for sure, then we can go ahead and make our adjustment. If it's one of those where we're unclear whether he's going to be suspended, then we have to wait. But for the most part, the line will come down and go back up within 5 minutes.
Who do you see in the championship series, the Heat and the and Lakers?
No, I don't think so. The Lakers are playing pretty well right now. But the Lakers have two teams in front of them that are both better than them, and that would be Oklahoma City and San Antonio, who is just playing. I don't know if you can gauge the San Antonio series with Utah to show how good they are, but they're demolishing this team. And right now, with the veterans that they have, San Antonio, and the short season, which has helped them a lot, they're really tough at this point. So I think it's them, Oklahoma City, and then probably the Lakers. And that's out of the West, you know, out of the East, with Chicago, you know, losing Rose,
yeah,
the main guy. They look to be in trouble right now. So it's kind of like Miami and everybody else is an also-ran.
Is Lynn Sanity back?
I don't think he's back yet.
Oh, I thought I heard talk of him coming back.
Now, John, with Dancing with the Stars, Jaleel White tried to do a Donald Driver in that he opened up his shirt so that we could all see his abs. Didn't work so well for him. Didn't work as well as it did for Donald Driver.
Well, I'll tell you what. I had him going home this week. I thought Melissa was going to be safe. I thought Melissa would dance against him and beat him. Here was his downfall, Jaleel White. It's all about the attitude sometimes and how that reflects towards the voters. And I thought his attitude was really poor, not only this week, but in some weeks leading up to this. And I think he just became unpopular with the voters. And so that was his demise. Not a bad dancer, but hey, this show's not all about dancing. It's about, you know, how you relate to the voting public.
Who do you have going home this week?
Well, you asked me that, and I'm sure you spoke to Melissa Gilbert, didn't you?
Yeah.
She's doing, I mean, she's hanging in there, guys. Let's face it, she's been one of the worst, and I'm not going to say she's a bad dancer. I'm just saying that when you look at them from A to Z, she's probably the least talented of the rest of the people left on the show to dance. But she's getting votes. She's somewhat popular. She's got a popular partner in Maxim, and that's working for her. But now, you know, the only person left on the show that I think she can beat is Rashawn Fagan, and not in dancing, just in personality. The rest of the four up there, Katherine Jenkins is great, Donald Driver is great, Maria Menounos has been having some really good weeks, and, you know, William Levy is really popular. So she's got a tough way to go to get through the next. If she can make it another week or two, I think that's about it for her.
And well, is your favorite for American Idol still the same?
Oh, in American Idol, Joshua, to me, is taking over the lead. He's Phillip Phillips, who was right there with him, didn't have a great week last night. And so, you know, he could be in jeopardy this week. If he gets through this week, he might be okay. But, you know, Holly's making a small move, although I don't know if any of the girls can win it at this point. I think it's Joshua's to lose.
Did you see the duet last night when they sang You've Lost That Love and Feeling? Could they have looked more uncomfortable?
Well, when you put a Joshua and a Phillip next to one another, Phillip's going to be exposed on voice.
Yeah.
Joshua is just a pure singer with pure tone. And that's not the style of Phillip at all.
Right.
Phillip's just harsh singer, and, you know, he changes things up, and it's his style more than his sound. And so the two of them, you're right. It doesn't work when you put the two of them together.
John, as always, we appreciate our time. If you are heading to Vegas and you feel like you want to do a little gambling, go lay your money down with John Avello at the Wynn Hotel. Johnny, we'll speak with you next Thursday.
Thank you, guys. May your Kentucky Derby bet be a winner.
Yeah, thank you. We'll be right back right after this, the Mark O'Brien Radio Program.
Welcome back in. It is the Mark O'Brien Radio Program. Little Whitney Houston news. I'll go with Bobby first. Bobby Brown appeared on the Today Show with Matt Lauer, and he said, quote, "I didn't get high on narcotics before I met Whitney. I smoked weed, I drank beer, but no, I wasn't the one that got Whitney on drugs. I'm not the reason she's gone." And he says he hasn't touched narcotics in 7 years. He said he was hurt to learn that Whitney had been using again in her final days, saying, quote, "I know she was struggling with it still. I can honestly say I love that woman with everything I am. I believed she loved me the same way." But they were like a match in gasoline together. Sources say, and this one I'm kind of not buying, because who'd do this?
Mm-hmm.
Sources say Whitney was buried wearing $800,000 worth of jewelry. Now, the family has decided that it's not practical to have 24-hour guards protecting her grave, so they plan to encase her casket in cement to discourage vandals.
Oh. All right, let's go to Gary. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning.
All right, Gary's a comic book guy, so careful, people. Mm-hmm. Careful what you say. Go ahead, Gary.
Oh, don't worry about it. Hey, I just wanted to make a simple correction. You guys listed Spider-Man as being DC Comics.
Oh, he's not?
No, Marvel Comics, along with the Avengers.
I surprised you didn't know that.
Wow.
I love the Avengers. Are you waiting in line for the Avengers tonight, Gary?
No, I'm not that type of psycho to wait in line. Like, you know, when the Return of the Jedi came out, I waited till the next day.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Crazy.
You know what? It's a movie. It's only a movie.
But it looks really, it looks good, doesn't it?
Oh, it looks awesome. I mean, I loved all the individual movies. I mean, the second Hulk movie was really good. The Thor movie was good. You know, I just can't wait till they get all the Avengers and they get, like, you know, Spider-Man makes an appearance with the Avengers in some comic books. And, you know, I'm a Spider-Man junkie, but...
Are you going to go to New York and see the play? Have you seen the Spider-Man play?
No, I haven't. I'm from New York originally, but...
Really?
They didn't have the play back then when I was over there. I really like to go down to, like, you know, Universal City in Florida, where they got the Spider-Man, you know, show going.
Yeah. All right. Well, Gary, thank you. Now, one of the things we gave away here on the show was an evening in the Disney suite. This was when we were doing the storage unit. An evening in the Disney Dream Suite. Now, I've done it. Took the kids. We went. This is the only place where you can, the only hotel room inside the park of Disneyland. I believe it was built for Walt Disney himself, and then he died before it was completed. We have Michael on the phone. He's the guy who won it, and they spent last night there. Michael, how you doing?
I'm doing really well. Actually, we spent last Saturday night there.
And, how?
I'm only just now got myself uncurled from the fetal position from the withdrawals.
They
practically had to drag us out. I think we left some fingernail marks in the marble.
How old are your kids?
Yeah. Well, my daughter is 15, and she brought a friend from school who's also 15.
Here's the thing. Each of the rooms do things. They're animated. They and you can be walking through the room, and the clock will say something to you. In the bedrooms, there's this button by the door, and it says, "A kiss goodnight."
Yeah, in both bedrooms, yep.
Yeah, and you push that button, and the entire room comes alive. And I'm telling you, light show, audio, video, and I think you only get 3 pushes on each one.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, 3 pushes. But there's a staff. There is a staff there that their job is to take care of you 24 hours. And as soon as the park closes, they knock on your door, they give you a robe, and you are walked around Disneyland when nobody else is there.
Yep, for 2 hours.
It's crazy. It's just an amazingly good time. It's the only hotel room that you cannot check into. You cannot pay for. It is by invitation only. It's the only way to get in, or you win it from us.
Yeah, I want to know when you're going to have another one, because I'm always waiting again.
Well, that's probably, Michael, that's probably going to be a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
Yeah, it sure seems that way.
It's never going to happen again.
While we were at dinner, they came in and they brought what looked like a red velvet cake with a clock printed on it in white frosting, but it wasn't. It was a box, and inside the box was a whole bunch of homemade truffles. And the box itself, even the lid, was entirely made of chocolate.
Hey, you hear Michael here? He's on a Disney high.
Boy, I sure am.
Well, congratulations, Michael. You're a big listener of the program, and it went to the right guy.
And apparently your life is all downhill from now.
That's pretty much the only downside of this.
Oh. Well, glad you enjoyed it, man.
Vacation like that.
Very happy you enjoyed it.
Michael, thank you, and we'll speak with you soon.
Okay, thank you much.
Bye. Business, and then we'll come back and tell you what's up for tomorrow. It is the Mark and Brian Radio Program.
Frank. What's up?
The Rangers at a
Who's
homecoming.
This? Not sure.
Harlem late last night. And a magic rat drove his sleek machine.
He's got kind of a gravelly voice. Welcome back in the Mark and Brian Radio Program. We're a little late, so we're going to get out of here quickly. Tomorrow, Brett Michaels will be with us. He's going to be playing the game with us, talking about he's got a new dog rocking pets line.
Pets Rock.
Pets Rock line, yeah, like leather vests for dogs and stuff, you know, with a Brett Michaels touch. But also, we're very, very proud to tell you that Brett Michaels will be with us at the 4th Annual Bongo at Morongo. I just thought of something. I had a conversation with my mom. Ah, it's too late. I'll tell you tomorrow. The 4th Annual Bongo Morongo will take place Saturday, June 9th. This year, we are going to rock with Brett Michaels. He'll be on stage. And, of course, we'll be crowning the new Miss Mark and Brian. She will get $1,000. And the winner of Mark and Brian's lap dance musical chairs will win $1,000. Tickets are $40 and are available on markandbrian.com. Go there now. Get yours while they last.
Everyone have a wonderful day. We will see you back tomorrow morning at 5.
Be good humans. Bye-bye.